Hey, you're listening to the Can You Kickstart podcast with Carl and Tom, the podcast where we delve deep into the projects of Kickstarter. Today our special guest is Tom Brown. Tell us about your project, Tom.
Well, we're doing a Kickstarter for a new project written by Alan Moore and directed by Mitch Jenkins. And what we're trying to do is raise enough money to shoot the last of five shorts to complete a kind of feature-length set of short films that all form part of the same story and a kind of introduction, a prologue to a new Alan Moore universe, really.
Cool. So we've got two Toms on the podcast. It's going to get pretty confusing. He wants to be Tom A and he wants to be Tom B.
We're going Tom A and Tom 1.
I'm Tom Brown, so Tom B, I'd probably answer that anyway.
Yeah, but he's Tom Blair.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, my middle name's Clancy, so how about Tom C, Tom B and Tom C?
I could go with that.
Well, that's a good start. Right, how much are you aiming to raise for this project?
£45,000.
That's a lot of moolah. What are you going to spend that on?
Well, we're going to spend it on the production for the film, because basically there are, you know, like two kind of key things that are going to cost a pile of money, and one of them is the production cost for making the film, and the other is making all the deluxe stock that we're going to do special versions of for Kickstarter. So, you know, like some of the rewards on Kickstarter, on this Kickstarter are, you know, like really lush, like mini box sets of the DVD and a book of the storyboard that you could read like a comic book, you know, with the original screenplay on one side and the pictures on the other. And they're not going to be cheap. But because we're planning on doing a release of that anyway, we're going to use some of the components from the standard version in the extra posh ones that we're putting out through Kickstarter as rewards. So yeah, the bulk of the money is going to go on the, well, all the money, you know, if we hit the target, is going to go on the production for the film, and the, you know, the whole project overall has cost hundreds of thousands of pounds, and we've been putting it together over the course of a few years now. And so this will be the last bit of the production budget for the five shorts, and it will all go towards the fifth short, and then we'll be able to finish the box set and crack on with the campaign of getting it out there. So it's film production costs.
It's quite impressive. Have you got any eagerly, well, I'm sure your fans are eagerly awaiting this. Have you heard much from them?
Yeah, I mean, we've heard quite a lot. Alan's got a really big following on Facebook, and I don't think that's where, you know, like most of his fans get their news from, but it's certainly a good platform for getting back in touch with us. So we've had a lot of feedback through that, and I've been really surprised that the kind of level of community interaction going on Kickstarter itself, you know, and a lot of people just seem to like being involved in Kickstarter and have got in touch, and we've had, you know, dozens and dozens of emails from, well, you know, messages through Kickstarter about the project. So it's been great to interact with people. Back in the olden days, you know, in the late 90s, I was the first employee of an online shop called Warpmart, which was Warp Records' shop, which is now called Bleep. And I ran that for a few years, kind of through the golden age of internet expansion. And, you know, it was always great having that contact with, you know, like with real fans and, you know, often being outclassed in terms of, like, specialist knowledge and stuff like that about releases and the artists and so on. But, you know, it's a really kind of amazing position to be in, because you don't normally get to have that much contact with an artist fan base, and it really reminds me of that time, you know, like dealing with Aphex Twin fans and Boys of Canada fans who, you know, like really liked the getting into the details. It's the same with Alan's fan base, you know.
Our social media has done wonders for many walks of life.
Oh, I can't imagine many Alan Moore fans know about Facebook, though.
Yeah, I think it's probably a tiny fraction of his fans. And I think on Facebook as well, you never know how, you know, like, some people will click on it because they're like, oh, yeah, so the Watchmen movie, I love that, you know, and click. You know, and it, you know, it doesn't take much effort to click on it. But I think some people click on it because it's a good way to stay up to date on the latest news, you know. So it's a combination of, like, really casual fans and some really hardcore fans that you know, like, know a lot more than I do about everything.
So how are you involved with this then?
Well, a few years ago we were shooting a music video for one of our bands called Neon Neon, and the producer on the project, who's called Nikolai, he told me that he was working on another project with a photographer who was working with Alan Moore, and I was like, wow, that sounds amazing. And for me, you know, like, I grew up in Yorkshire in the 80s, you know, I was born in the 70s, but I, you know, I grew up in Bradford, and, you know, my connection to sci-fi was 2000 AD, you know, and I've still got a stack of 2000 ADs with my house number written on the front of it, and, you know, it used to get delivered every week, and you'd read Tharg's Future Shocks and Halo Jones, and, you know, like, all my interest in sci-fi literature and, you know, like, a lot of other things is, you know, at a foundation in 2000 AD, and so for me, like, Alan was, you know, like a, you know, like a towering genius that informed me of loads of crazy ideas that have no doubt influenced the way I think about everything. So, you know, like, the idea of working with Alan on any kind of project was really interesting. So we got in touch with the photographer, and he's Mitch Jenkins, and he's best known, you know, like, in the business for, you know, like, really high-end commercial stuff, you know, like, you know, like, rebranding Channel 5 and shooting the billboards for HBO and loads of Hollywood movies and all that kind of stuff. And it was just the, you know, he'd gone to meet up with Alan Moore one day, and they got talking about the idea of Mitch doing an art project, because he used to make music videos for, you know, like, bands on Creation Records and stuff back in the day, and he decided that he wanted to do something creative alongside the kind of high-pressure, high-end stuff that he was doing. And so they started working on the Unearthing project. And so when we got involved, it had been going on for a while, and Mitch had been shooting Alan's ideas and turning Alan's story and his ideas into, you know, like, really posh photographs. And we pitched the idea to them that we turn it into an audio book that would come out at around the same time. And it ended up that the audio book, even though it took a while to put together, you know, because the Alan's recording of the story was, you know, like, 2 hours long. So it's, you know, it's a lot of work for the musicians that score. But we got two artists from our label who were really enthusiastic about the project and the challenge, really, to put the whole thing together with Alan. So we recorded Alan at a studio in Northampton on a little street just across the road from a Games Workshop shop. I didn't know they existed anymore. I'm sure they're doing really well, but I hadn't seen one since I was a kid. And we spent an afternoon there one summer recording the whole of Unearthing, and we used Mitch's photographs in the packaging and put it out, and it was, you know, got a 9 out of 10 review in the NME, and, you know, Alan, you know, is, you know, at the time was kind of mid-50s, and, you know, he was really chuffed to be reaching new people and breaking into new audiences, and it was really well received. You know, we got great write-ups, you know, in the New York Times and the LA Times, you know, like, Dazed and Confused and all these different places, you know, the Quietus and stuff that he hadn't been covered in that kind of detail before. And so he really enjoyed that side of the project. And we did some live events, you know, where he did readings, and the musicians, Andy Broder and Adam Drucker, under the name Crook and Flail, they scored them. And we did them in the, it's all about, I heard the word psychogeographic for the first time. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce it, but you know, people were describing the work unearthing as that, and it, you know, it's all about the layers of history in London, and we did the performances under a train station in London in some old abandoned railway arches that had a kind of had seating in them, and you know, it was just a really cool project to be involved with. And then Mitch and Alan really enjoyed it and decided to do a stills shoot for Alan's occasional magazine Dodgem Logic, and so they started, you know, working on an idea for a stills shoot. And then when they shot the stills, Mitch shot these stills in a old working men's club called St. James's, and you know, locally in Northampton it's called Jimmy's End. And so Alan wrote a kind of story for it, and then they were like, you know, maybe we'll shoot a 5-minute piece, and so the idea grew out of that. You know, it was like, I think it was just everybody really enjoying working together and getting good results doing something different. And you know, Alan, you know, Mitch is too, but Alan is a huge fan of, you know, specific TV series and movies, and you know, he's very literate in that, and you know, like, has a lot of love for film and television, believe it or not. And I think he, you know, like, as the project grew in ambition and scope, he was just really enthusiastic about it. So it went from one short and turned into a series of shorts, and now he's writing the screenplay for a feature film, and he's had the idea for a TV series that might spin off from it. And you know, some of these ideas are kind of reinforced from conversations that we've had, you know, like, so, you know, like the idea of doing a feature in the TV series spun off from a series of conversations with Film 4 that we had years ago, you know, when the project was really early on. And then Alan will just be thinking about how, you know, whether he, you know, he'll get into an idea and he'll come together quite quickly. So in a way, we're still, you know, we're in the first stage of it, which is to complete a set of short films that tell the first part of this story. You know, and I guess we've all been learning a lot as we go along. You know.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the actual project itself. Mm. What's it about?
The story.
Yeah, the story. Sorry.
No, the project story. What's the story about? It's about, I don't know. I mean, on a really superficial level, you know, like if I was telling somebody, you know, because one of my jobs is raising money for it, and we've put in a big chunk of money, and we've had a big chunk of money from, you know, like a brand, and we've had, you know, like, you know, we've been getting it funded, and we were going to release the four short films together, and because Alan's actually written, you know, like, ideas and screenplays for a bunch of short films that fit into this story, this universe. But he was like, oh, I always imagined it's five in this thing. And we were like, well, you know, we talked about a bunch of options, and then the idea came up of doing a Kickstarter and reaching out to people, because we're so close to finishing it, you know, we can offer people the finished thing. So the story is about, it's weird, sorry. Basically, at the end of each section, you think you understand what's happening, and then at the end of each short, you think you know where you are, and at the end of each short, it changes again, or hopefully it does. So it's not all meant to be revealed in one stroke. But what can I say? Alan said it's about holding a mirror up to culture, and so it's kind of about that. But it's really, if I was doing the short pitch to someone, I'd say the big story is a bit like Twin Peaks set in Northampton, maybe with a bit of Get Carter thrown in, and you know, possibly even a hint of Watchmen. But I'm sure Alan wouldn't say that himself. But there's definitely elements that people will recognise from that.
Yeah, how does one pitch an Alan Moore idea?
Well, on the one hand, he's you know, like, really well known for writing stories, And I think if you add up all the cinema grosses and home media sales and all that kind of stuff for his for the film adaptations of his work, it's done, you know, like something like $1 billion or something over the course of the last four movies. But they're not really great representations of Alan's storytelling. I saw V for Vendetta on like Netflix or Love Film or something the other month. I'd never seen it before, but it's pretty shocking. It doesn't have much in common with the original. And what's the other one?
Watchmen was the same as well.
Watchmen was weird because they changed the ending as well, which I thought was really strange. You know, like after all the talk of trying to, you know, like please or placate Alan, they changed the ending of the story. The worst one's got to be From Hell with Johnny Depp, I think. But maybe that's so bad that it doesn't really count or something.
I'm gonna go with that one.
Yeah, but I mean it's. You know, like, it's a pretty traditional story. So for a bit, we had the first two shorts up online, and the first one starts off with a character called Faith, and she's kind of, you know, one of the leading characters through the whole thing. She's a female protagonist. She's an investigative journalist, and she's just uncovered some dirt on somebody who's recently died, and then she ends up in a sticky situation herself. And then in the second short, Faith comes across somebody else who appears to have recently died. And, you might think that it's some kind of take on the Black Lodge from Twin Peaks or something, but nothing's quite as it seems. And I think the other three shorts in this series will kind of expand on that and expand on the story. And I think that the key characters that you come across in these shorts all feature in the story for the feature film, and so it's it all kind of fits together. But I'd like to think it was classic Alan Moore territory.
It does sound like classic Alan Moore territory. I mean, I've seen the trailers to it, and it looks like one of those films that has, like, a lesson to be explored.
Yeah, I think there's definitely hints of, like, you know, like, moralistic stuff there. But, Alan's one of those guys. I met up with him a couple of weeks ago, and we're doing this thing at Latitude where we're showing all the shorts that we've done so far, and he's going to be talking through them with Mitch and with Adam Curtis, who's a BBC documentary filmmaker, who it turns out we all really like. We were talking about who we could get on board for Latitude to kind of keep the pace of the conversation up and ask intelligent questions and, you know, just make it a really engaging evening in the film tent on the Sunday. And and we were all like, Adam Curtis, you know, and it's perfect. And it, you know, like, in a very different way he tells stories through film, but they've always got a very clear point. They're very partisan, you know, they tell one side of a story. It doesn't like weigh up both sides or whatever like you get in the some documentaries. But he's incredibly sharp and intelligent, and I basically spent an afternoon in the garden of some old bendy roofed medieval pub in Northampton listening to Alan Moore and Adam Curtis picking the films to bits and talking about how they all worked. And I think that, you know, things like kind of moral twists and stuff like that, you know, there's definitely a hint of that in there, but there's so many other layers to dissect that, you know, it doesn't really do it justice to peg it as a moral tale. But I can definitely see why people would think that.
Cool. Well, your Kickstarter says it's one story told through five.
Mm.
Is there a lesson per story?
I don't know. I mean, I hadn't really thought about it that way. I think that I don't know. It's weird thinking about it. about it that way. I think it's all part of the same theme. I don't think they're like, you know, it's like a set of moralistic tales. I think it's
an overall story with a lesson.
Mm. But I think there's ideas about all sorts of things, you know, like I kind of feel like with Alan, part of the reason people like his writing is because you know that even though if he's going to cover something that's like well-worn and, you know, like a well-trodden path, he's going to cover Jack the Ripper or he's going to look at superheroes or things that people have written, you know, like hundreds of thousands of pages about, you know that he's going to put a twist on it and approach it in a really different way that's going to make you think about things in a different way when you finish it. And that's what you get with an Alan Moore story. So even though some of the things seem familiar and I don't think anybody else would have written them in the same way.
Yeah, I think that's really classic Alan Moore writing, actually. I think that's what makes him such a good writer. It's how he can put the twists on really old stories. I mean, look what he did with, like, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Or the public domain characters.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's some of that later on. We've got a lot of notes, you know, and it reminds me of Watchmen in the sense, you know, in one sense, because, you know, in Watchmen, there are pages of newsprint and there are adverts for products that only exist in the world, you know, in the universe of Watchmen. Alan's kind of done that here, and he's written comics that kids read, you know, and it doesn't crop up in the first five stories, but there are kids in the bigger story, and the comics that they're reading, he's written the first few episodes of, you know, the first few issues of the comics that they're reading, and again, you know, they're public domain characters, you know, that have, you know, their copyrights long since expired, I hope. And, you know, he's written those, and, you know, and he's written about every product that you encounter, every drink on the cocktail menu behind the bar in Jimmy's End, the TV series that James, the lead in Jimmy's End, he glances up at a screen for a few seconds. He wrote the whole first episode of the cartoon that's showing on the screen, and it's called Mr. Hodge, and it kind of mirrors what's going on. You know, the way that Itchy and Scratchy mirror what's going on in The Simpsons?
Oh, yeah.
It kind of mirrors what's going on in the story, but that's like a tiny glimpse of an episode that he's written the whole screenplay for, you know, and at some point, in theory, it could get made. And he's written, you know, like invented products and companies. He's invented the slogans that you see on billboards as people drive past them. And he's invented, you know, he's come up with ideas for loads of media. He's written radio shows, and we've recorded some of them as well for that play in the background. And all the songs that you hear are songs that he's taken a song that he originally likes that he would have wanted to have in the film, but he wants to kind of hold a mirror up to culture. That's what he was saying. So he's kind of rewritten the lyrics over the original song, and then the guys who scored Unearthing, Crook and Flail, a few years ago, they scored that 2-hour audiobook. They've been working putting together the songs so that they sound like original 50s, 60s, 70s songs in Jimmy's End and modern ones in Act of Faith. And they've turned them into kind of fairly convincing pop songs, and we've drafted in a bunch of different vocalists to sing them, you know, so it's not just the same guys plodding through the same songs, you know, like Tunde from TV on the Radio sings the song on the trailer, you know, which is inspired by a Roy Orbison song, and there's a couple of Lou Reed tracks, and or Lou Reed inspired tracks, and they're sung by Alan Sparhawk from Low, you know, a big American band, and Nona from Dark, Dark, Dark sings a Karen Carpenter part on one track and so on, you know. But it's a bit like Watchmen in the media that you come across in the book. You know, like everything's being created by Alan. But nowadays, there's the whole internet. There's so many different products. And with modern media and, you know, like modern life, there's so many more things, so many more blanks to fill in. And that's what he's been filling up the last couple of years doing, you know, like filling in the blanks on this universe. It's like pretty kind of staggering to, you know, the prospect of having to do it justice at some point.
Yeah, it just sounds really staggering. I mean, that's an amazing level of detail there in that world.
Yeah.
So what challenges have you faced doing this?
With the Kickstarter.
With the Kickstarter.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is letting people know about it. You know, like we were saying that, you know, Alan's fans, you know, like, there's only a tiny fraction of them on Facebook. And, you know, there's different kinds of fans there. There are, you know, like diehard fans and, you know, really casual fans. And they're all, you know, great, and we can reach them through that. And there are existing fans who've already contributed to the project, who have funded, you know, like some of them have funded hundreds of projects on Kickstarter, and it's amazing to find fans there. But I think a lot of Alan's fans aren't just hanging around on the internet, you know, like waiting for something to pop up. They're, you know, leading their lives and coming across things in different ways. So, you know, one of the challenges is going to be reaching them and doing bits of press and possibly bits of radio and make it exciting for them. But I mean, we've been really happy with the response. We're just over a week into a 30-day campaign or Kickstarter, or I'm not sure what the correct terminology for it is. And you know, we've done a third of the target already, so you know, we're feeling really hopeful that we can get the project funded and crack on and turn around the product. I think for a lot of people running Kickstarters, because, you know, like since we decided to do it, I've been reading a lot of things and watching video clips on other people's Kickstarters and stuff. One of the big challenges is putting together the stuff that they're meant to deliver. And I think that's something that we can come through on really well. You know, we've already made 4 short films in this series with exactly the same team. And we've already made, you know, like Unearthing with Alan, you know, which was, you know, like a really beautiful box set with Mitch Jenkins photography. And, you know, the audio was beautiful and, you know, it's presented really well. And, you know, we did a few thousand of them and they all sold out. And it was all turned around on schedule and so on. So I think that in terms of delivering what we say we're going to deliver, you know, with the film and with the products that are related to it, you know, we can do that. That's what we do. I think the big thing is just making Kickstarter work for us, making sure that people who really want to own, you know, like this book and the DVD and, you know, see the films and, you know, get stuck into this massive new story, you know, are going to get a chance to do it. And, yeah, I mean, you know, like you on Kickstarter itself, every day we get messages from people, you know, like very politely, very helpfully telling us something dumb that we've done or something that we've forgotten to do.
We understand. We looked at doing it ourselves.
Yeah, but I mean, it's great because it's got a, you know, a real feeling like it is a community. You know, people don't talk about you. Well, they do sometimes, but they mainly talk to you, you know, and then you can talk back to them and do something about it. And that's a really good thing. You know, like at first we didn't realize that, you know, like if somebody wanted a t-shirt and the DVD, that we had to set up, you know, like a t-shirt and DVD combination, or if they want the t-shirt and the poster, it needs a t-shirt poster combination. We thought that you could just pick and choose off the rewards. So, you know, we've been tailoring that and we've been trying to introduce other kind of fun stuff over the next few over the last few days. And we've also got Alan and Mitch are meeting up this week to shoot a few more clips to talk about stuff that's been going on and also expand on on what they've revealed about the story and the world and the project so far, you know. And we're talking to some of the actors who are all really involved and really supportive of the project about doing clips as well, and just trying to get people to understand the project without giving everything away, you know, like, you know, because I think ultimately if you're a big fan of Alan Moore, you're going to want to have the storyboard and screenplay book with the films, you know, that are his first films all in one place. And eventually, you know, like in the traditional way, we'll probably reach the bulk of people who could possibly want to buy this anyway, you know, like we'll run a campaign, we'll have cinema screenings around the country and, you know, and possibly abroad, and, you know, we'll make the films available in shops and every conceivable digital platform, because that's what we do. But at the moment, you know, like Kickstarter's, you know, one of the challenges is you've got a really specific time scale, and it's a kind of community, so you've got to respect the way that people want to be told about stuff and want to be given things, and kind of make it easy for them to do that.
Okay, I'm out of questions, actually.
Have you considered what you do with any extra money you make from this, if you overshoot your target?
Yeah, I think we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, because, you know, we've still got two-thirds to go, and I think the first thing that we'll probably do, you know, funding short films is really tough, so we've got quite good at doing things on a shoestring budget, you know, shoestring in film terms. Because, you know, like, you have quite a finite amount of, you know, like, you've got one or two shoot days to get everything done, everybody turn up on set and do an amazing job and turn it round and then go into post. And we're always trying to strike deals to bring the cost down on grading or sound design, or, you know, like, you know, people who aren't necessarily part of the kind of creative team, you know, the costs that we can't, you know, that are harder to get people to discount, you know, things like cameras and stuff like that. So I think that some of the limitations that we have with the kind of short film budgets, you know, I think if we made a little bit more, we'd probably try and add value, put more on screen and make it an even better film than we're planning to do now, you know. And we think we can do an amazing job with that budget, but you know, if we can take it up a level, we will. And then I think if we got a lot more, you know, which is obviously really ambitious and probably unlikely, we might shoot the next film, the next short film in the series of shorts that Alan's written. And I don't want to give too much away about it at the moment, but it reveals another key character who appears in the feature film, and it's their backstory, and, you know, they couldn't be more kind of appealing to even the most casual Alan Moore fans. It's you know, like, it's a really exciting thing. But at the moment, you know, I think we're very much focused on cracking this first level of getting his Heavy Heart film funded and getting it all made. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think the idea would be just to keep on putting it into the film project.
Cool. So where can people find this then?
Well, we're on Kickstarter, and we're on Alan Moore's Facebook. So Alan Moore's Facebook's like Official Alan Moore, and the Kickstarter, if you put in Alan Moore or Mitch Jenkins into the Kickstarter search bar, you'll find it there. You probably know a smarter way of finding things online.
No, that's actually the exact way I found it, by typing Alan Moore into the search bar.
But yeah, so I mean, it's, you know, like, it's up there at the moment. It's live until sometime in July, and you know, I'm happy to say that we're ripping through the limited edition signed DVD and book format things, and so if people want to get those, they should probably hurry up.
Cool. I think that's the end. Questions? Yeah, podcast. Well, thanks for being on.
Yeah.
Wish you the best of luck.
Thanks very much. Have you got any advice for me?
Do we have any advice? Well, what we learn a lot from interviewing other people is
charisma.
The main thing. The main thing we learn from other people is that they usually have trouble really getting the word out there, bringing it in as many people as possible.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah. You know, I'll carry on pushing it. I think we've got a lot of stuff still to come, you know. But hey, stay in touch and let me know what you're doing with the podcast as well, because we'll help get it out there if that makes sense.
It does. We'll help spread your word too.
Yeah, wicked. Okay. Well, thanks again for taking the time.
Oh, do you have a Twitter or anything like that you want to plug up? How's the time?
Do you know what? I don't know if Alan Moore's Twitter's verified, but I assume it is. But if you went to Lex Projects on Twitter, you'll see plenty of tweets about it, and that'll take you back to the everything that's going on. And lexprojects.com is a good place to find out about this as well. We'll have all the updates there.
Cool, and for anyone listening, the actual link to the Kickstarter will be on your screen or on your pod, iPod even. Oh, yeah. Losing my tongue here. Yeah, thanks again for being on, and yeah, we'll be in touch. Hope it goes for the best for you.
Yeah, wicked. Thanks very much. Bye.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.